Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on Gold Radio Cafe. It's Friday, October 12, 2012, and welcome to the Gold and Silver Financial Review. My name is Vasco Kacharovich, and this program is brought to you by Central Metals Corp. We understand the problem, and we have the answer. Gold and Silver Bullion Investments. Our website is centralmetalscorp.com. Our phone number is 519-915-7542. And our email address is mail@centralmetalscorp.com. So if anybody wants to send in some questions, just direct it to that email. We have our regular guest and co-host, Jeff Dunphy, on the line with us today. Jeff, how are you doing today?
Good afternoon, Bosco. I'm doing just fine. A whole bunch of stuff to chat about this week, and more in keeping with continuing ongoing conversation of owning the metals and watching the politicians and the military and all kinds of things happen, strikes and strife in various countries all over the world.
There's always something interesting to talk about on this program. I'd just like to give our listeners a couple of quotes here first before we get started. Gold seems to be falling down a little bit today. It seems to be their usual Friday activities. It's at 1761 right now. And silver is at 3367. There's been a lot of information on the blog sites and gold sites that they intend to keep gold below the $1,800 level until after the election, and that gold is going to just, start another rally once it breaks through 1800. So I believe that is possible, and we have a good chance of testing last year's high of 1925, possibly by the end of the year, or early next year. So either way, folks, I think we're headed for much higher prices in the near future. Jeff, anything you wanted to discuss as we get started here?
Well, I want to sort of carry forward some topics from last week that didn't get particularly comprehensively addressed, and I also want to chat a little about civil unrest, and I also want to chat about mainstream gold purchasing. I also want to chat about gold price manipulation and the election, which you just mentioned. So where do you think we should start, Bosco?
Well, it's up to you. Take your pick.
Okay. Well, let's chat a little about the topic last weekend that we had with our guest about a variety of things. But the first thing I want to talk about is the China and Japan upset right now. Mm-hmm. And also it has been a bit hijacked as well. China and Japan were in negotiations to start transacting in something outside of the U.S. dollar, so the U.S. currency, the global world currency. And one of the things that transpired in the course of all this, that as soon as we get out of the U.S. dollar being the reserve currency for the planet, the U.S. dollar will collapse and gold will go up. The U.S. doesn't want that to happen. They want all transactions, global transactions, to happen in U.S. dollars. Now, that being said, here was the implication was that this lad implicated was that the upset between China and Japan right now over this island off of Japan and the Chinese burning and throwing cars up and pulling people out of their cars and burning Japanese cars is a hangover from the Japanese atrocities that happened prior to during the Second World War. So we have some emotional upsetting things, but it had also perhaps hijacked the conversation of a financial transaction in either renminbi or the Chinese currency and the Japanese yen. That's an interesting little scenario. We also have, Bosco just mentioned, ladies and gentlemen, that we have an election coming up, and the election is in but a few short weeks. And we're also seeing that the election is a little tighter than it had originally been thought it would be, with Romney winning this last election. What does come to light and what gives us great consternation is the potential manipulations by the big banks, by the financial institutions, of the commodities, gold and silver. And if, in fact, that is happening, the other commodities are probably potentially being manipulated as well. They want to keep the price of gold low because they want to indicate to the marketplace that everything's copacetic and fine. Now,
Jeff, real quick, we have we got a question in from one of our listeners regarding Japan and China, mostly Japan. Basically, he's asking if you've heard anything about an 80 billion dollar stimulus package that Japan is going to be introducing.
Yes, in fact, I have, and this is, I mean, one of the things that is happening globally is everybody merely by default, because the Americans are doing it, the Europeans are doing it, the Japanese are doing it. It is part of quantitative easing. It's the printing of money to stimulate economies, and the printing of money to address this calamity in the only way they know how. There's an old adage, Bosco, goes like this. When your only tool is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And when your only tool is printing money and inflating yourself out of problems, it never occurs to you that there may be other aspects of a solution. You just don't ever investigate them. So there are very few economies or governments. Now, the Japanese are tightly held and an international economy and an enormous economy as well. So it goes to common nonsense, even though it should be called common sense, that everybody will try to inflate their way out of this pickle. Can't happen, won't happen, and it will lead to great calamity.
Just a correction. The question, it was $80 trillion stimulus package in Japan. That seems quite large. I don't have a source for that link, but is that what you're seeing?
Well, it might be 80 trillion yen, which sort of falls down into it. So, in fact, I'm not conversant with the exact number, but I do know that there are very few economies that are in need of stimulus that will not use the printing. Now let's fall into quantitative easing, which Jim Sinclair speaks to, which a variety of people, and what Bosco and I have been speaking to for a long time. Now let's chat a little about the euro and what has recently now starting to come out on the internet, but not in mainstream media, and that is the Spanish revolt and upset. It is quite disconcerting, ladies and gentlemen, to see the Spaniards being beaten by their police force, and it's on the internet and it's on a variety of sites, but the mainstream media is just missing it altogether because the Spaniards are going, just a second, you as a government borrowed your brains out, and now we have to pay for your foolish largesse, and now what you're doing is cutting a whole bunch of stuff, and there's huge unemployment. The unemployment numbers now are starting to look absolutely painful. In the front page of either the Globe or the Post, in the last little bit, have been the unemployment between 15-year-old and 24-year-old is almost 50%. And unemployment in Greece has just pushed past 25%. So this is beyond the Great Depression, and that is what the governments want to tell you. So the odds are that it might be a little bigger. I don't know, Bosco, you and I are both skeptics, but we're also pragmatics. If they told us what it really was, would it make things worse for them? Possibly. As this starts to happen, now let's chat a little about the Middle East. Let's chat about Israel, Iran, the Iraqi expenditures, the Syria nonsense, the Hezbollah and all of this stuff. These things are not simmering mildly. They're starting to percolate and starting to heat up. People are going to start to throw around more and more weapons, more and more upset at each other. This is not getting calmer. This is not falling into what we refer to, Bosco, as the normalcy bias. It's getting worse. And to add fuel to the fire, it's recently come to light that one of the aircraft carriers of the United States Navy has recently been committed to mothballs, not yet committed, and consequently, before they decommission it, which costs them $1 billion, they're going to sail it into the Middle East, into the Straits of Hormuz, into the Gulf. I don't know, Bosco. That sounds a bit curious to me. Maybe.
Well, yeah.
Maybe food for thought for everybody.
Yeah, people have to, realize that. I think the actions that the U.S. and European governments have been taking over the past number of years, maybe since 2007 or so, it's obvious that the financial system is in ruin, and they're scrambling to try and fix it. But to tell you the truth, I really don't think that they want to fix it. They want it to collapse so that they can gain more control and establish their one world currency. And I think this is part of the agenda that they have with the euro. A lot of people say that the euro is going to fail, but I think they're going to do whatever it takes to keep it together, and they're going to use the excuse that they're going to print more money and try and bail it out. And by printing more money, the collateral damage, if you will, of that is more control over the people. They're going to force the people to submit to their new laws and new regulations and so on. We have what you just discussed about Spain. We also have protests going on in Croatia, which is, they just entered the euro recently, I think in the past couple of years. I guess over there that they're rejecting the austerity measures. So basically, I mean, what's happening really is that they're selling out, countries are selling out their sovereignty to the euro for the hope of future stability. But that future stability is going to be based on control by a third party, the European Central Bank or the Eurozone or whoever runs that. So it's going to be, it's a hostage situation, really. They're taking you hostage, and you're going to have to submit to their new rules if you want your country to continue to exist. If you don't, then you're going to experience what's going on in the Middle East right now. The U.S. is going to come in and take things over, and it just reminds me of the that one book by John Perkins. Economic Hitman. It's a very good book, and it kind of explains what these global powers are doing and how they're, getting into these countries and influencing political decisions and political leaders for their financial benefit, or whoever's controlling them behind the scenes. So it's quite a quagmire we're in.
No question. And you've brought up a couple of points that I think shouldn't be lost on our listeners now that we've been harping on them for some time. And that is, everybody who the Americans owe money to are discontent with the fact that the Americans are merely going to print their way out of that debt. So they're going to get paid back with dollars that are becoming less and less valuable. That is a given. The other thing that becomes more and more obvious as this calamity unfolds, as the wheels start to come off the various vehicles that they're playing, is this. It would appear that because the powers that be are not looking out for your best interests, they're looking out for theirs, it would become apparent more and more that their actions, aside from being incredibly self-serving, are now skirting, if not completely passing over, the laws. They're starting to subvert the rules of law. And when you subvert the rule of law, you start to define how you choose to act. That is not a pretty place to be, and it's a place that we as Americans or North Americans or Canadians or the like, we look on other countries and we tisk-tisk them. We go, oh, here's a country where the despot runs the country and he gets world aid financially, but really when they give him $100 million, he puts 99 into the bank and he pays for an administrative fee of $1 million and none of it gets to the people. Well, how far do you have to skew it to the other side to realize that is in fact how the bankers and politicians are playing this game? They've been telling us that they would be looking out for us in Social Security in a whole bunch of these things. And we'll, let's reiterate the numbers, Bosco. The Americans generate, the federal government generates $2.5 trillion. It spends $3.5 trillion. That's minus one a year. It has pretend real bookable debts of $16 trillion. And it has real, non-pretend, unfunded liabilities of $120 trillion. Okay, they're going into the red $1 trillion a year. They really have to pay 120 plus the 16, 136 trillion a year. Somebody in grade four could figure that math out, Bosco. This is not going to work. Now, when these things happen, oftentimes, certainly history tells us this, people go to war. Now they have to figure out in that twisted, horrible, black way that says, how can we get the American people or the North American people or the world to think that somebody's the bad guy so that we can go in and start throwing bombs around? Wars happen when fiscal and financial calamity happened. And there's some schools of thought that said a war will be good for the world economy. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, war is never good for anything. People get killed. People spend a whole bunch of money and wealth starts to transfer even more egregiously than it is right now. So I don't know, back to our scorecard, Bosco. Probably prudent to own gold and silver. Probably prudent to pay attention to the fact that world affairs are not getting smoother and easier and more convivial. Things are getting worse. This we call, in some of our circles, we call the law of acceleration. Greed runs its course by blowing itself up. Ugly thought that something that needs an audience, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I just wanted to reference one article that came out this morning from Rolling Stone magazine. I'm sure many of you heard about Matt Taibbi. He put out an article titled, U.S. Sues Wells Fargo, Yet Another Bailout Bank Accused of Fraud. And at the beginning of the article, he discusses what Charlie Munger of Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway mentioned earlier this year. His comments were, gold is a great thing to sew into your garments if you're a Jewish family in Vienna in 1939, but civilized people don't buy gold. They invest in productive assets. And then it goes on to talk about that Charlie Munger was investing. They were investing in Wells Fargo, and now they're being accused of fraud in the mortgage problems that they're having. So, and I saw another article earlier, it was about last month, comparing the performance of gold compared to Berkshire Hathaway. And believe it or not, gold outperformed his fund. So, I mean, I'm sorry, Mr. Munger, but either he's completely wrong or he has a separate agenda. And the thing, Jeff, that you know, I discuss with most of my clients all the time is, you know, in the mutual fund industry and investment industry and so on, people have been kind of, they have raised Warren Buffett to, you know, a status that he's the ultimate investor and so on. But I have to tell people that you have to understand that no average or middle class family can invest like Warren Buffett. He has a lot of good theories on value and so on. Yes, that's true. But to invest like Warren Buffett is impossible for the average middle-class family or even the wealthy, because he buys entire businesses. He has so much inside information, and he's connected politically and so on and so on. you can't invest like Warren Buffett, okay, unless you're a multi-billionaire. So forget about following his strategies and his investment recommendations. You have to look at what's best for you and your family. And you have to understand that when you go into debt or you have your funds that are in a retirement account, you have to understand the counterparty risk, okay? One, when you're in a retirement account, you are subject to the government changing rules, possibly. You're subject to that mutual fund or that investment broker going under, or we've seen a number of fraudulent activities in the past couple of years. So people, they have to wake up and realize that the financial industry as we knew it is completely different now. There's a lot of different factors at play globally and domestically that are completely diminishing the value of your investments. And people need to understand what value really means. When you know that the central banks around the world are continuing to print money, that means the value of your dollar is continually decreasing. I don't care if you're making 2, 3, 4, 10% on your money. You need to understand that the value of your money is going down and your cost of living is going up. And when you're in debt, okay, the value of your debt is going on, and some theories say that, you know, that hyperinflation is going to wipe out your debt. I really don't think that that's going to happen. Theoretically, it's true, but I don't believe that the governments are going to allow that to happen. When you're in debt, they're going to keep you in debt, and it's like I call it a prison. It's a debt prison. You're whether you're a country or an individual, and you're in debt, and you've seen what's going on in Europe right now with these. Like when a company or a country gets bailed out, basically you go into debt and you have to submit to the new rules of the lender. Just like when you have a mortgage on a house, you don't really own that house. The bank owns the house until you have it paid off. So if the bank changes the rules or interests are adjusted, you're subject to those new rules or new adjustments. So people have to be careful with their pensions and their retirements. And as you discussed, you know, a lot of these pensions are underfunded. And, you know, I try and let people realize that, you know, when you're contributing to your pension, you know, let's say 30 years ago, you're contributing $1. That $1 used to buy, let's say, 2 or 3 loaves of bread. Right now, that $1 that you contributed, when you receive it back from your pension, you can only buy maybe a half a loaf of bread. So you have to realize that the dollars that you're contributing to your pension 20, 30 years ago are much larger dollars than they are now when you receive them. So that kind of changes all the forecasts of your comfortable retirement that many banks and financial planners are projecting for you. Because their projections are based on a dollar that is one unit, and that unit is the same 30 years from now, which is not true. That's a false projection, and people have to understand that the value of your dollar is continually declining as central banks are printing more and more money. So, sorry, I just got going there, Jeff. And I just
Ladies and
to
gentlemen.
That contact.
We can see clearly that Bosco is dealing with a lot of his clients, and they're quite concerned about their financial welfare. And I think he's made some very good points. Just for Bosco, I think what Bosco meant when he said the bank owns your house, while it doesn't officially own it, the teeth they have in their mortgage means that they can come and take it if for any reason you cannot pay the mortgage.
Right.
Now, we've just seen in the last little scenario was the mortgage crisis was there is very gray areas in who owns the mortgage on various houses. So one of the things that could lend itself and could be ugly is that you have a whole bunch of people, while the banks are collapsing, you have a whole bunch of people stop paying their mortgage merely because maybe they can't. But the other thing that might present itself is maybe they can pay their mortgage, but because nobody knows who owns the mortgage, this is more in the States than in Canada, they just stop picking. There's all kinds of themes and variations on this scenario. Now, the banks themselves, the reporting performance of these various financial institutions, the Warren Buffetts of the world, have been very competent in the old paradigm. I think it's fair to say, Bosco, that we're entering a new paradigm. We're entering a paradigm, as I just mentioned, where the guys that run the countries and the guys that run the money that run the countries are stopping to pay, are not giving any attention to the real rules, the rules of the law and the rules of what is happening. They're starting to skirt the rules. They're starting to lie and cheat and steal in plain view. That's a little disconcerting. What they were doing previously was lying and cheating and stealing behind closed doors. And then the governments were saying, ooh, you're lying and cheating and stealing has created an environment where you're about to go bust. Well, we can't do that. Let us give you money to bail you out. This is where both Bosco and I, ladies and gentlemen, have been for a while. And we want to be mindful that we don't aren't catastrophizing so much as that we're trying to turn the lights on. An interesting little foray in the banking business this week, Bosco, is that we've had J.P. Morgan being sued for Bear Stearns improprieties. Now, here is a bit of a paradox and also a bit of hypocrisy. So here's the joke, the inside joke that we can now share with everybody. The U.S. federal government came to J.P. Morgan and said, please take these guys over. We'll give you the money to take it over. Now, J.P. Morgan is not innocent in any of this, right? However, now what the in the throes of that, the J.P. Morgan guy said, okay, well, if you're not going to let it go down like they did Lehman Brothers, we don't want to be sued or fined or held responsible for the misgivings or the shortcomings of Bear Stearns historically, to which I'm sure the federal government said, yeah, no problem here. Just take the money and take them over. Now, as if playing the hand that goes like this, justice must seem to be done, so we have to run around suing people for doing bad things. So they get out the proverbial Nerf bat and wrap them briskly on their knuckles, Bosco and I have been saying for some time. So now what they're doing is the federal government, they're suing, there's a class action lawsuit against J.P. Morgan for what Bear Stearns did. This is a bit hypocrisy, don't you think, Bosco? It's funny, and it's not pretty, but it's maniacally hypocritical in all of this stuff. You have to take these guys over, but when you take them over, we're going to come and sue you. Hello?
It's unbelievable what's happening now in the financial markets. You know, apparently there was a day when there was respect and honor in dealing in finance, but now it seems to be like a racket, a mafia-based strategies and so on. And one of the person that mentions that quite a bit and understands it, Gerald Celente from the Trends Journal, he talks about the mafia tactics and so on that's going on in the financial markets and in politics as well. I mean, people are being paid off and so on. It's just it's obvious that we're, like you mentioned, we're in a paradigm shift, and I think this is one of the fundamental things about going to gold. When I think throughout history, when these things are happening around the world, people need to realize what actions to take. And I think that obviously over the past 20, 30 years, people have been steered away from understanding gold, from understanding why you should go to gold. And, they've been directed to put their money into investments and funds and retirement accounts and so on. And the thing about retirement accounts is, you know, what always gets me going is that every bank and financial planner is going to tell you that it's a penalty when you take funds out of your retirement account. And it's not a penalty. Okay, a penalty denotes that you're doing something negative or you're doing something wrong. You're not doing nothing wrong. You're basically, all things considered, you're basically just balancing your account with the government. You're saying, okay, thank you for the tax benefits during my contribution years. I'm going to pay you those tax dollars that I owe you, and you're just going to manage your own money for your retirement. Thank you very much. You know, get the government out of your retirement accounts. A lot of people are doing it. I know a lot of my clients have done it. And in the U.S., people are starting to get their money out of their 401ks and IRAs and so on. It's just people need to understand what a retirement account is. It's when the government's going to give you benefits, they're not going to give it to you for free. Even those benefits that they give you when you contribute to your retirement account, those benefits, those dollar benefits, have to be returned to them when you take the money out. So it's not really, yes, there's tax deferred, and we can get into that, but that's a different topic altogether. But basically, the big picture is that it's just an account that you have with the government. They give you benefit now, and then you have to return those benefits in the future. So, but what
we call this deferral of taxes. That's all. It doesn't mean you don't have to pay them. It just means you pay them later.
Right.
And so when you RSP, you put the tax that was owing on them, and it's deferment, and it's something the law, as Bosco has said.
Yeah. And it's not a penalty, you know. And I hate when people say that it's not a penalty. Because you have to pay those dollars back to the government anyway. Whether it is when you retire or if you pass away and it goes to your estate, eventually those tax dollars are going to get paid back to the government. So it's not a penalty. You're just balancing your account with the government. That's all you're doing. And I hear time and time again people calling it a penalty. It's not a penalty. Okay? It's not nothing negative because you have to do it anyway. So,
right.
Interesting. You know, and this is the thing that, I mean, it's a thing that it goes to the creating the big illusion, Jeff. You know, they're creating this illusion that, you know, and making these promises to people that it's impossible for them to fulfill those promises, like with the Social Security and these pension funds. How can they fulfill those commitments when the funds are these pension funds and retirement accounts and so on are underfunded, and the bank continues to print money out of thin air, and the government themselves are in a huge amount of debt? It makes no sense. Like you said earlier, a four-year-old can figure it out. There's no solution to fix the problem. And I don't, like I said, I don't believe that they want to fix it. They want more control. And when you're subject to more debt, whether you're a country or an individual, when you're subject to more debt, okay, you're subject to more influence from the powers that be because you're in their hands. You owe them. Same thing with retirement accounts. You're subject to possible changes in the rules of your retirement account, possible changes in the currency value, or whatever the case may be. And this is one of the reasons why people go to gold. Not now I'm a gold dealer. No, it's just the right thing to do. And it the same thing happens throughout history. And like we discussed earlier, there is evidence now of gold going into mainstream media, which was posted on the blog Thundering Herd, which Jeff, you contribute to that blog as well?
Absolutely, yeah. It's very much in alignment with our thinking, Bosco, yeah.
Could you give our listeners a little bit, a sneak peek at that post? I read it earlier and I posted it on our website, but could you maybe expand a little bit and give our listeners some of the information that's in that blog and how it's going mainstream, how gold is going mainstream, sorry?
Absolutely. Well, let's chat a little about the whole context of how money is managed. then let's chat a little about the modality in effective manner. Okay, so so one of the things that happens in pension trust accounts in the funds that get put together for your retirement, and also in the funds that are put together to pay these unfunded liabilities that the U.S. government has. Universities have big amounts of monies that they manage and organize. And in the throes of the hundreds and hundreds of these organizations that manage money professionally, they are all, as we talk of, they are all vested in various things. So they invest in, metaphorically, they invest in apples and oranges and bananas and you know, the carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. They invest in hard goods. They invest in the automotive industry. They invest in technology industries. They invest in Facebook, although many of them are pissed about Facebook. But the whole portfolio portfolio management modality is that you have a mix of investments. So an asset, various asset classes. Let's say there are 10. And so you are exposed to these various asset classes so that you have a stable or balanced portfolio. And what tends to happen is that things fall in and out of favor. And what we posted, what was posted on Thundering Herd, was the context that perhaps investing in gold and gold mining companies may be something that these pension fund managers and these fund managers say, that maybe it's now time to be a little more interested in gold and gold companies. So, and over the last 3 years, central banks have become net buyers of gold to the tunes of hundreds and hundreds of tons a year. Now, interesting, much of this buying is from Asia. Okay? The Western central banks have been completely preoccupied with printing money, so consequently, a lot of money is being spent on gold right now to accumulate gold by Asia and India. Now, that being said, it gives us great consternation that this gold is being accumulated, but it also gives us great hope that the small amounts of gold that we are acquiring and accumulating will be worth, in our opinion, a lot in the next little while, because we've foreseen a collapse, in essence, right? So when everybody says yes, as a fund manager, as a portfolio manager, we think that we need to be exposed more to gold, this means these fund managers now say, ah, well, if he's doing it, maybe I should. Ah, maybe if he's doing it, I should. And consequently, the domino effect, everybody starts to say, okay, it's time to get more into gold. And they say, well, we have 100 units of money to spend. Why don't we start to spend one or two or three or even five? In fact, one of the fund managers has come out and said, let's go into 5% gold. Well, guess what? When you manage, as a guy named Bill Gross does, $1.8 trillion, and he says, let's maybe think about gold to invest, all of a sudden the demand for gold goes through the roof. When the demand for gold goes through the roof, so does the price. Because gold is limited and finite, all of a sudden our predisposition, our mantra, owning some gold and silver, benefits us. And the funds actually don't want to miss out on the ride that gold has been having from $200 or $300 in the last little bit to now close to 2,000. I mean, it's 17 and change today, 1760 or 50. But that's where the portfolio manager theory comes in, Bosco, where we get, maybe it's becoming mainstream that this should happen. This is sort of, we've broken it down into phase one, phase two, and phase three. And it's, again, there's lots of people saying that it should be at $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000. An interesting little observation, Bosco.
Well, yeah, and and this is the perception or illusion or whatever. People need to understand that gold priced in U.S. dollars can go to $5,000, it can go to $10,000. Gold priced in Zimbabwe dollars or the former German marks during the Weimar Republic, gold went to like $1 trillion. So the you can price gold in whatever dollars you want, whatever currency unit you want, because if you know that the central bank of that country or that currency is just printing money beyond belief, the price of gold is going to be different in every country. Just like if you take any other commodity or whatever, you take an apple and price it here in Canada and take it to Europe and China and try and sell that apple, you're going to receive different currencies for that apple. And the numerical value of the currencies is going to be drastically different, but they're just numbers. But the fact is that gold, 1 ounce, measuring 1 ounce of gold is 1 ounce of gold wherever you take it. And the whole point of it all is having a medium of exchange, okay? Gold historically has been a medium of exchange because of its natural qualities and composition and so on. I don't want to get into that. But it has acted and performed as money for longer than any bank, any stock market, any currency that has ever existed in the world. Why? Because of its natural qualities and so on. Ancient civilizations realized this, and they chose to use gold as money because of this reason. You could take 1 ounce of gold and trade it for a cow or corn or other services and supplies that you need because of these certain natural qualities that it has. And the thing that you know, it's difficult for a lot of people to realize how currencies function and that how, you know, a central bank can just create all this currency and it reduces your value. And what happens as a byproduct of that, prices go up. So prices, the price of a commodity, a gallon of gas or a bushel of corn or whatever it is, the price of that commodity going up isn't necessarily, you know, that it has more value. It doesn't have more value. It's the same thing. It just the currency that you measure it in is decreasing, okay, in value, which means that there's more supply of it. And when people understand this fact, then they start to wake up and you view prices and value in a different light because you apply it to your standard of living and you realize. And I tell all my clients, you're not really going to profit off of owning gold. Gold is really insurance. It's what is used to lock in your standard of living. Okay, you're saying that I'm going to gold for safety because I know that governments around the world, and it's not like that we're speculating. They are. Central banks around the world are printing money. The U.S. Federal Reserve a few weeks ago said that they're going to bail out the mortgage industry by creating $40 billion a month. That's a huge amount of money, okay? And that is, to me, in my eyes, that's enough said. The bank, the central bank, the Federal Reserve said they're going to create $40 billion a month. That, for me, is a lock that gold is definitely going to go up. So, folks, you can expect that your cost of living is in a roundabout way going to be increasing $40 billion a month. Prices are going to go up as a reflection or as a byproduct of those actions. We've seen the commodities industry already. I mean, corn and wheat, I know because I used to follow that industry quite a bit, but we have droughts in the Midwest in the U.S., corn and wheat prices are going through the roof. You know, of course, those are fundamental reasons. But to add to that, the Fed is printing money, and that just means that the price of commodities is going to go sky high. And that's you can expect you're going to feel it at the grocery store in the next 6 months.
$40 billion a month is the equivalent of half a trillion paper dollars a year. Now, I want to focus in Bosco's point, and I think there's a certain the other thing that I want to focus on too is that the marketplace, the stock market, is climbing because really it is in real terms, but it's climbing in nominal terms because all of a sudden you have way more dollars out there. And so while Bosco says gold is not a profitable thing to do in times of massive devaluation or massive inflation where they just print money. Gold is an exceptional store of wealth. If you have wealth that's real wealth in real terms, in real measurable aspects, gold is a very important store of your wealth. Now, in terms of gold being worth $5,000 US, that's a store of your wealth because perhaps $5,000 US doesn't buy what $5,000 US did a year or two ago. That's a point very well made by Bosco, but the most germane aspect of this is this. Gold is an unbelievably important store of your wealth, to which, Bosco, I think we've reached our time limit, have we not?
We're getting pretty close, yeah. We can go a couple more minutes, Jeff, so we can maybe just make some closing comments, and then we'll sign off for the day. So go ahead.
Righty. So let's pay attention to three things today, ladies and gentlemen. Is the calamity in the world getting better or worse? Is the fiscal actions of the central banks of the planet, we spoke of Japan, we spoke of Europe, and we speak of the U.S., and Bosco's just said $40 billion a month, which is half a trillion a year, is that getting better or worse? And has anything presented itself to give us any change of mindset or attention to think that gold is becoming a better source of storing your wealth? With those things for food to ponder, I thank you all very much for listening, and thank you very much for allowing us to be of service.
Thanks, Jeff. And I just wanted to remind our listeners, you know, go visit the blog site, thunderingherd.com. There's a link also on my website, centralmetalscorp.com, to that article about gold going mainstream. And as Jeff mentioned, these aren't some small-time hedge funds and so on. This is Bill Gross and Ray Dalio, who a lot of the big high-end pension fund managers follow. These are some of the best people in the business, and they're going to gold. So, you know, hopefully we get some people that wake up and realize, you know, gold is the place to be. So, again, Jeff, thank you for your time. And thank our listeners for joining us. And we'll get together again next week for some more news and information. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, all.